Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, thousands upon thousands of trees were lost in the August 10th derecho. I'll talk about plans for replanting with Shannon Ramsey of Trees Forever. But first, the way that COVID-19 spreads has made it particularly difficult for musicians to safely make music. Studies show that the coronavirus spreads through aerosols, which are microscopic virus-packed particles that can remain suspended in the air. In the spring, pretty much all live musical performances were canceled. But with the beginning of a new season and a new school year, music programs, professional and amateur, are trying hard to figure out ways to safely practice and perform. In a few minutes, I'll check in with the director of the School of Music at the University of Northern Iowa and a junior high band director in Iowa City. But we're going to start with some of the professionals. Maestro Joseph Junta is the director of the Des Moines Symphony, and he is on the line with me now. Hello.
How are you, Charity?
I am okay. And of course, in the spring, this felt like a difficult but temporary state. We probably thought we could maybe be back to normal by fall. But in the spring, we had to cancel everything. What are you doing now? What does the next season look like for you?
Yeah, our biggest challenge, Charity, is just to stay in front of our audiences. You know, it's serendipitous that at a time like this, people really need music to feed their souls more than ever. And it's interesting that, of course, we've not been able to perform live. But the challenges we're meeting the best we can. And in our case, we have three live stream concerts that we're going to be doing for a small group of musicians starting October 1st. And it's going to include, somewhere around maybe 25 to 35 musicians and interesting repertoire that I probably wouldn't be considering for a large symphony concert in the Civic Center that seats 2,500 people. And I think in general, we're all pretty excited about it, not just for our loyal concert goers, but also for our maybe some new people that will catch us online.
How have your musicians been coping? Of course, you can practice at home. You can practice safely by yourself no matter what you play. Stringed instruments are far less likely to produce these aerosols that can pass the virus from one musician to another. But are there some creative ways that your musicians have been dealing with this?
Well, they have. Once again, online, we have started, I think the second week that we went into isolation, we started the DMSO at Home series, which is a series of self-produced videos that the musicians have sent in to us. And they've gone out, I think we've had well over 100 or 120 of those performances so far. And they're very funny. Some of them are quite serious music. Others are just what you might expect from a home movie of people, just how they're washing their hands and keeping their places sanitary and everything else. So as you know, Charity, musicians can be very creative when it comes to something like this. And the other side of that is that I'm continuing to do each week what's called the DMSO listening room, which is I take one composer, talk about one piece, and then have a listening link to a recording or two that I like. So this is part of what we're trying to do to stay in front of our audiences.
I think the last time I had you on this show, we were talking about some of the creative things that you were doing to keep classical music in front of audiences, period, because it's always a challenge. And of course, you have a large organization, some incredible professionals. They need to be paid. You have performance halls and all kinds of costs. How is the Des Moines Symphony doing financially right now?
Well, the best way I could say that, respond to that, is that I think we're holding our own. We've not had to furlough any staff members at this point. We, of course, are musicians. One of the great advantages of an orchestra like Des Moines is that it's a part-time orchestra, so many of our musicians have other jobs. They either teach in schools or universities, colleges throughout the state, or they have their home studios with students. So, for the most part, They continue to do those things that they do so well, either online or in the privacy of their own homes. It's a challenge, and we hope to be back with live performances, income-producing performances by New Year's Eve. But if that doesn't happen, then we'll just have to cross that bridge when we come to it. The good thing, Charity, is that the Des Moines Symphony has had 10 very good financial years. We've been smart about our decisions. We've got a wonderful audience, a very loyal audience here at Des Moines, and Central Iowa believes in the power of this orchestra and what it can do for the community. And I'm absolutely certain that with the decisions that we're making now, that we will come back once the green light is signaled in even stronger than we were before pre-COVID.
Well, Maestro Joseph Junta, thank you so much for talking with me.
It's always a pleasure, Charity. Thank you.
And best of luck. Of course, you can look at DesMoinesSymphony.org. That's DMSymphony.org, and find out about how you can enjoy DMSO at home in some unique ways. We're going to check in now with Orchestra Iowa, based in Cedar Rapids. Maestro Tim Hankowicz is on the line with me now. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
I am all right. Now, in addition to all of the pandemic struggles with Orchestra Iowa, you were already dealing with all the same things that we were just talking about in Des Moines, but the derecho also hit Cedar Rapids. So how did you come through?
Well, it was wonderful to hear Joe speak, because he really hit the nail on the head about some of the challenges that orchestras throughout the country are facing, and in many ways we're a carbon copy of what's going on in Des Moines. Our situation was complicated, as you said, by the derecho of all those hurricane-like winds, and unfortunately our offices were destroyed, and along with it, our library. So our operational capacity in the last 3 weeks has been significantly damaged and curtailed.
Well, and I need to remind everyone that you also had tremendous losses at the Paramount Theater in 2008 because of the floods in Cedar Rapids, and were without a home for quite a while.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, I think water just doesn't like Orchestra Iowa. From the flood, the water came from the ground up, and then because of the derecho, which kind of dislodged our roof and created a bunch of sprinkler system pipes to break, the water came from the roof down. So right now I'm a little allergic to water.
I am so sorry about that. And you were doing many similar things to the kinds of things that the Des Moines Symphony has been doing with live streaming, and people can have a cocktail with you every Tuesday afternoon on Facebook. Tim, what does the future look like for Orchestra Iowa now?
Well, I think it's very much the same as what's going on in Des Moines. I think the real challenge for orchestras across the country is, how do you preserve capital so that you can come back to business when the green light is given? But also, how do you stay in touch with your patrons and your supporters and your audience? Certainly through streamed performances, which we were also looking at. But as Joe was alluding to, where he shares his thoughts on particular pieces and recordings, I basically do the same thing, as you already said, through a happy hour every Tuesday at 5 o'clock on our Facebook page. And so it's the best that we can do in the meantime to stay in touch with our supporters.
You were going to be doing an outdoor concert. I know that it's been such a difficult time trying to figure out whether musicians can perform together, whether audiences can be socially distanced, especially outdoors. That seemed promising. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're alluding to our annual Brucemore program, which unfortunately is going to have to be canceled. See, I think a lot of lay people don't really understand that there are two problems to this equation. One is social distancing the audience, which depends on the size of your venue, whether it's an indoor venue or outdoor. And at Brucemore, the lawn size is absolutely huge. It's a gorgeous setting. And so social distancing and controlling flow of people through bottlenecked areas as they enter a particular facility, that's one problem, and in this case would have been easily solved. The other is, how do you social distance an orchestra? Because it takes just as many musicians today to do a Beethoven symphony as it did 200 years ago. And so when you're outdoors in a very limited space on a stage, it just makes it very difficult. And then when you take that problem indoors, basically where you play and the size of the stage and the size of the audience really puts limitations on the number of musicians you can use and employ and the number of audience members. One extra problem that we also have in Orchestra Iowa is that many of our musicians come from out of state, many from Illinois and Chicago, which means that if we were to have a concert here, they would have to quarantine themselves for several weeks before they could return home. And so that also makes an additional burden on the logistics of just putting on a concert.
Wow. So there are so many challenges here, Tim, and of course with the property destruction. What are you looking at in the future? When are you hoping that Orchestra Iowa can begin performing in front of audiences again?
Well, like Joe, I think we're going to wait and see what happens until the new year. I think by that time we'll know much more about the likelihood of a vaccine and how widespread it can be. But I think as in so many other businesses, I think we can only hope to come back to some semblance of normal once we have a more widespread vaccine.
And looking at the damage to your building, what does the future look like there?
Well, right now I wouldn't encourage people taking a tour through our place. It looks like much of it has been torn down, but we're in the process now of having it adjusted and looking at our insurance. And I think probably, knock on wood, I would think our facilities will be pretty much back to normal about the same time, early on in the new year.
All right. Well, another comeback to come.
Exactly right. And I'm thinking 2021 is going to be such a better year than 2020.
Oh, Tim, we are all depending on that right now. Well, I'm so sorry for what you're going through right now. But Tim Hankowicz,
thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Maestro Tim Hankowicz, Director of Orchestra Iowa. We're going to continue talking about the challenges that musicians are facing. We're going to turn our attention to musical education, which brings with it many unique challenges during this pandemic. More in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Replanting Iowa's trees post-derecho, coming up in just about 15 minutes. But right now, we're talking about making music in the midst of a pandemic. And for those who study and teach music, these are particularly challenging times. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'll talk with Kevin Brown. He's director of bands at Northwest Junior High in Iowa City. With me now is Jeff Funderburk. He is director of the School of Music and a professor of tuba and euphonium at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Charity. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And of course, again, back in March, you and I went online. Students were sent home, and presumably your music majors made music on their own during that time. But in bringing students back to campus, you have about 300 music majors. You must have been spending all summer trying to figure out how you could possibly make music together. So tell me about that process.
Absolutely, spent all summer doing that. Much of this involves aerosol productions, as you've mentioned before, and there has really not been any research done on it. So most of what we're doing is trying to stay on top of the newest research and then addressing that as quickly as we can. There's been a lot of work trying to figure out our HVAC systems, measuring floor spaces, moving ensemble rehearsals. It was a lot to do.
Absolutely. And now that students are back, can you give me an idea of some of the ways that you are bringing them together? And I guess I'd like to start with talking about the band, because as I mentioned earlier, people who play stringed instruments are not producing those aerosols, at least not in the same kind of high number that people who are actually blowing into their instruments to make music or singing produce those aerosols. So let's talk about band. I mean, you normally start the year with marching band, hundreds coming together to play their instruments.
Yes, and we did. And as it was not the greatest year to have the band increase by 25%, but it actually is larger than we've had for several years.
Wow.
The good thing there is they're used to being outside. They're on football fields and the like, so we can social distance that group. So it is continuing to go. Of course, the postponement of the football season threw another wrinkle, just as we figured out how to do it for football. So they're now functioning as a concert band, in essence. They'll be doing some marching and standing up things, playing around campus. But you're right, the challenges are different. So we have a little more than 20 ensembles. So we're facing all the problems that the orchestra directors were talking about, but they vary between groups. So with the bands that have to rehearse indoors, we've moved them to the stage of the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. Luckily, that facility is part of the university and not an independent business, so we're able to use that. There's slightly smaller groups to allow for social distancing. We have vinyl panels around every performer to prevent the aerosols from moving to the neighboring person. We've got bell covers on any instrument can do that. We have clarinet bags around instruments. It's quite the unusual group to look at the moment.
Absolutely. And using those barriers in between musicians, that's somewhat controversial. As you said, there hasn't been a great deal of research about these aerosols and how they travel yet. I mean, that is ongoing. And these are all musicians in an indoor space. So you've also had to look at the air systems and how the air is flowing, right?
Exactly. So our HVAC people have increased air flows as much as they can on campus to increase that part. But you actually still have to go into the individual space and see how the air is moving across the room. In the case of the Gallagher Blue Dorn, we recognized after doing smoke tests that the air would essentially come from what was the front of the stage across the back of the stage to the air returns, basically blowing across everybody in the ensemble before it went out. These panels, after testing, showed that it would contain it within the cubicle with the player until it rose and then go directly out. Luckily, it's almost like the HVAC system in that room was designed for this time, because the returns are on the back wall 10 feet up and our panels are 10 feet high. So wow. It's doing a really good job of moving the air away.
Tell me what a clarinet bag looks like.
Well, it's a big nylon thing that you stick your hands in. You can't see the instrument. They're not something you would choose to do in another time, but they've been proven to help contain the aerosols that come out of the actual tone holes on the instrument. So they're and our clarinet professor made them for all the students, because most of these things are new ideas, and you can buy them commercially. Theoretically, you can order them, but when you will see them is the question. So a lot of our people are just having to learn how to make these things and then provide them to all of the students.
So was there kind of a sewing bee to put these clarinet bags together?
I've got terrific faculty. Each one of them went in, just did it for all of their students and
wow.
Handed it to them and said, here, use this.
Wow. So I can imagine that one of the biggest concerns are the seniors that you have in your music program, because this is their final year at school. And some of them, of course, will be launching professional careers. Some of them, this may be their last time to really deeply immerse themselves in music. How are you feeling about those students and what you can offer them this year?
Well, the thing we are trying to do is make sure we're offering the opportunities to play and sing and do these things. But we're also having to do it in the safest possible means. The feedback from the students has been terrific so far. We have a great group of students. They're extremely happy. Despite all the weirdness of how ensemble rehearsals look, they're enjoying being back at rehearsals. Those that have to do degree recitals and the like, we will still need to do those. So we'll be having those kind of concerts, but we will not be able to open them to the public. As earlier guests alluded to, when you do appropriate social distance spacing in your audience, you lose the majority of your capacity. So on average, you can only seat 10 to 20% of the normal audience and keep them socially distanced. So we simply don't have enough seats for people beyond the, we'll allow music students, music faculty, and family members of the performers in the room. And otherwise, we will be streaming our live concerts for those events. But, you know, rehearsals are tricky as well. So we are using technology to have pianists perform the accompaniments and then give either recordings or a disclavier. We have a disclavier for use that way so that students will be doing a lot of their rehearsals without the pianist there, and then they will only be there for the final rehearsal and concert, again, to keep everyone safe.
Well, and speaking of technology, you're planning to make use of recording technology as well with your jazz bands, right?
Yes, the jazz bands. First, we're hoping to get a concert for each of the large ensembles outdoor before the weather changes. Once they move from that, they will be moving into a recording project, so they will be working on essentially laying down a recording as one might when they're building a recording in a recording studio. So they'll take one section in the studio, record things, and then bring another section in another day and record over the top. So it does give us an opportunity to work on some skill sets that we wouldn't normally have time to do. So we are trying to see this as an opportunity to find things that we could do that might not be usually in the curriculum, but they're certainly valid and they're important to know how to do. And usually you figure it out on the job someday later. We're putting it right now in the educational experience.
If school has to go back to being online, what do you feel you can offer your students through the end of the semester?
Well, we've even in the spring, for example, the wind ensemble did, I forget, three or four virtual pieces where everyone recorded their part and then they were put together in a piece that was then released on Facebook. There are some plans to do that if we have to go that direction. Many of our lessons are already virtual private lessons, so we have taken 20 practice rooms and turned them into mini recording studios so that someone can go in that space with a web camera, a good microphone, and everything, and have their lesson. So in certain things, like opera singing, for example, you just should not be in a room with someone doing that. 6 feet isn't remotely enough space to keep safe. So in interest of safety, we're already, whether we're both in the same building or not, we have to do the lesson remotely in some cases. Mm.
Well, I hope that 2021 requires a lot less creativity, but it sounds like you have employed an incredible amount of ingenuity in making music at UNI this semester. Jeff Funderburk, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jeff Funderburk, director of the School of Music and a professor of tuba and euphonium at UNI. And of course, his students are deep into their musical learning. There are a bunch of new band and orchestra and choir students as well all over the place. And their teachers are trying to figure out how to teach them in the midst of a pandemic as well. Every school has its own approach. And we've invited Kevin Brown, who's the director of bands at Northwest Junior High, to join us now. He teaches 7th and 8th graders. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And what is your biggest worry right now heading into this school year?
I would say that most band directors, and speaking for myself particularly, the biggest fear is that kids will be so worried about the many responsibilities that are thrown on them, whether they're online, hybrid, whatever, that they're going to feel they won't be able to find the time for band in their schedule or other music courses. And that is the last thing we want. I would say that our number one goal is we want the same number of kids at the end of the year as we had at the start of the year. We don't want to see kids give up on music.
Well, and of course, I know that as a junior high band instructor, you have lockers in your band room, and there are instruments that just never leave those lockers. I know some students didn't take their instruments home for spring break last year.
That can't be true, can it? That can't be true.
They were separated from their instruments for a very long time. Are you also concerned that with such young students away from their instruments or away from maybe a weekly lesson that they just won't be playing?
There's definitely concern. I think we expect that. Our motto has very much been, this is what I told my students all the time when I saw them at the end of the year last year, hey, don't worry about where you are. Try to play now. Find things that you enjoy playing. We really focused on that. I'm not concerned about, I need you to play exercise 15 on page 22. We were concerned about, hey, did you know you can go online, you can play along with Star Wars and things like that and find that joy of music. And wherever you are, once this passes, and we always reiterate, it will pass, once it passes, we will take you wherever you are and will continue your progression. We're not concerned about creating amazing musicians right now as we are of having kids that enjoy the musical process and will continue to grow through that process and become intelligent consumers of music down the road.
Now, I know you've had a long summer of planning. Iowa City schools were intending to start the year online, and then they were going to be doing the hybrid version. You have a lot of students who have opted for online. Now it looks again like Iowa City will be starting the year online. So you've been back and forth a lot. But can you lay out for me, given that about 40% of your students are going to be online, when you're actually in person, you'll have a hybrid approach. So you'll have half of your students in person, half of each week, right? So give me, kind of lay out what band will look like for the students that are in school.
Sure. We, I am very fortunate in Iowa City to have an administration that has really gone above and beyond. Just to give you an idea of what we're dealing with, I mean, when we look at what we started with, I have 150 seventh graders signed up for band this year. And there is no way you could, we were worried about fitting in the room before there was going to be a pandemic. So
right.
The first step is to take those online. We had about 70 that went online, and they will be getting a weekly lesson with myself or our assistant director, Mr. Carlo. In small groups. We have to figure those groups out, but they're still getting a weekly lesson where they can play, again, keep it enjoyable, making connection with these students. Now we take the 80 that are left, and my wonderfully supportive administration and counselors said what we're going to do is we're going to divide that into two courses so that seventh grade band meets twice a day now. So now we're down to 40 kids per class, and then you divide that into the every other day. Now we're down to 20 kids per class. And that seemed something we could manage. And I was in here Friday with my tape measure out at 6 feet and just going, making sure that between each chair I have 6 feet of space. Our district has ordered bell covers for all the kids. The kids will be required to wear masks while they play. And that does seem like something not very feasible, but that works. They make these wonderful masks that you can split apart, throw the mouthpiece through, and then play some more. And then finally, I've had to look into creativity, and I've bought about 3 box fans and some MERV 13 filters that we'll make sure after the class period's done that the room has those running, has 30 minutes to refresh that air. That's a lot of studies have shown that's the important part. Refresh that air, keep it moving out so that the next group of 20 can come in and we can continue to move them forward.
So while you haven't had to have a sewing circle to make those bell covers and masks, you do know other band directors who've been doing that, right?
It is an absolute, tons have. It is fascinating to see, for instance, my social media feeds and to talk with colleagues. It's so different from every building in every school, from the level of support you see to the high rates of, for instance, in Johnson County, of course, we're a little higher rate than perhaps another county where I was speaking with a director last night that they're pretty much full time. They end a little early. They space themselves by playing outside or performing in the seats of the auditorium. And she then said that she has one of 3 foggers that the school has that she gets to use after band and hit everything with a disinfectant. So it is different from school to school. It is, you'll see a lot of creativity being employed in many different places by many different educators.
Right. And I'll bet you never thought you were going to be making do-it-yourself air purification systems.
Well, I don't remember that techniques course at University of Northern Iowa, but maybe they'll add it in now.
Right. It sounds like something. Maybe they can teach it over Zoom. So, Kevin, last spring, you had a lot of fun making videos to inspire your students. You were playing the music yourself, playing multiple parts, putting these videos up on Facebook and sending them through email to your students. Do you feel like you were able to connect virtually with your band students during the time when you were away from the building?
I don't think anyone can feel as fully comfortable through the virtual of Zoom. I'm sure we've heard of Zoom fatigue and things like that that are new words we have now thanks to these circumstances. But I certainly felt that it was at least a try. It's so important to me, and I think to many educators in any field, that we make that connection with students. But in band, you often hear of students that, you know, band is the thing that brought them in. And
right.
And so
it's their community.
They need that.
That's where they find their people.
Yes, exactly. So hopefully I made them laugh and got a little chuckle and continue to be that way.
Kevin, thank you so much and best of luck to you and all your students.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Kevin Brown, director of bands at Northwest Junior High in Iowa City. He teaches 7th and 8th graders. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about replanting trees post-derecho. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The derecho on August 10th destroyed and damaged thousands upon thousands of trees as it passed through Iowa. It's now estimated that the Cedar Rapids area lost 65% of the trees in the city. With damage spread from Missouri to the Mississippi, it's almost impossible to comprehend how many trees have been lost. Trees Forever is a national nonprofit group based in Marion, Iowa. They've launched a Planting Hope campaign to help replant trees in Iowa and Illinois and to aid in recovery from the derecho. Shannon Ramsey is the founder of Trees Forever. She's on the line with me now. Hello, Shannon.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks so much for having us on to talk about trees.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And back when you founded Trees Forever, I imagine that you probably could not have imagined a storm like this, 770 miles long, destroying trees all along the way. What was your reaction when you started to realize how bad things were post-derecho?
Well, it's been an emotional few weeks for many of us, for all of us in the path of the derecho. I mean, really emotional. I lost my neighbors. It was kind of our iconic, huge 300-year-old oak that went down, and really I did cry. Mark Hirsch's That Tree went down up by Platteville, Wisconsin. In Cedar Rapids, it still looks like an absolute war zone, and a bomb went off in this area, Cedar Rapids, Marion. I think we've lost millions of trees, and, you know, a lot of people have cried. I mean, it's been an emotional few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you have been involved in recovery from storms in the past. I know that you worked with Parkersburg to try to replant trees after their terrible, terrible tornado. But again, I mean, the magnitude of this is enormous. So tell me a little bit about the plan that you've put together to help people.
Well, we launched this campaign called Planting Hope. And it's our slogan is Hope for Today, Trees for Tomorrow. I mean, that pretty much says it, you know. We felt like, I mean, our hearts were breaking, but we had to get moving and do something to give people hope and give others, you know, an opportunity to help out. We had one guy that had several volunteers come out and take down his trees. And they wouldn't take any money, so he donated to Trees Forever for this campaign. It's so touching. We, you know, I want to emphasize, too, Charity, as you, I mean, the winds were 140 miles an hour. It's mind-boggling, and apparently the rest of the country did not hear that. We're even hearing from people in western Iowa that did not know the winds were clocked at 140. So, I mean, it was like a level 4 hurricane. It hit, you know, Des Moines, of course, Marshalltown, Tama, Clarence, into Illinois. Oneida, Illinois had a spinoff tornado. I mean, Tama, it really has left us all with an enormous path of destruction. So Trees Forever works with hundreds of communities every year. And we have so many volunteers involved in this huge movement of planting and caring for trees. So we will continue to give communities funding through this Planting Hope campaign. We hope to do residential plantings for homeowners. It's really a huge undertaking.
Absolutely. And I want to ask you, when you start, if you have, let's say, farmland that you're going to turn into a woodlot or a forested area, when you make these plans, you think about how long it takes trees to mature, and you plant trees that are going to mature quickly but maybe not live as long, and you plant those slower growing trees as well. With an urban forest like Cedar Rapids, like Marion, do you think about that? Do you try to get some trees that are going to spring up quickly, or is it a different calculation?
It's important to always have multi-layered age of trees in an urban forest or in our rural forest. So that's an important piece. Diversity of species is really important. We are emphasizing native trees, especially for pollinators. Pollinators need trees in a major way, and so do birds and so many critters. So we lost so many iconic oaks, large oaks that were, you can't imagine. I mean, one large mature oak can feed over 400 species. So, you know, that's a huge loss. We have a lot of critters without homes. So we'll be planting wonderful native trees like oaks, lindens. Generally, Iowa has too many maples, but I'm sure there'll be some maples going in. There's so many wonderful trees to plant. We're encouraging people not to think about, you know, I may never see the shade of that tree. You can get a lot of tree growth in 5 years. So we all, you know, we're going to be planting for future generations, right?
Right. So, and we'll enjoy watching them grow, even if the house is warmer than we'd like in the heat of the summer sun. You are giving people the opportunity to learn to be tree caretakers. Tell me about that. Or tree keepers.
And by the way, if you go on our website, you'll see the banner for Planting Hope, just so people know in case they're, you know, on their computers while we're talking. Yes, we've always emphasized volunteer involvement since the beginning. It's always been, we don't just hire a nursery to go out and plant. We involve volunteers, and that's always been a keystone. We have a wonderful program called Tree Keepers, where we train tree keepers to, you know, all the basics of planting and care. And say, for example, in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids, where we have hundreds of tree keepers, they can go out and work on city street trees without permission because, you know, it's part of the program. Our city arborists are real involved with it. So they're highly trained, and that we have a new tree keepers program starting, and it's online. So people can become tree keepers from all over. So that's on our website as well. We'd love to have people sign up for that. We also have just large groups of people. Let's talk about Marshalltown that got hit real hard. A great group there doing tree planting. Story City got hit hard, the Story City Trees Forever group. It's a wonderful group of volunteers kind of led by Mayor Mike Jensen. So it's an army. We also have in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids, we have these wonderful youth employees. We have a program called Growing Futures. They are actually planting all the new trees in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids in partnership with the cities. That is a wonderful thing to train these young kids on taking care of trees, and hopefully many of them will get into, you know, green careers. we're going to need a lot more teams than what we have right now of growing futures to do this.
In Iowa, I can imagine that the demand for young trees is going to skyrocket dramatically. Where will all of these trees that people will be planting come from?
Well, we have locked down a few large orders for trees just in case. But, you know, I think it may take time. We want to focus on native. And I think that could be a problem, Charity. It could take some time. We may end up doing some small nursery operations just to, you know, grow up some trees quickly from seedlings. We're just not sure. We're talking to nurseries about that. Nurseries are always great partners. You know, they know their business. And we have some great ones.
On your website, you also have resources for people whose trees have been hit. Of course, here on Talk of Iowa, we've been answering a lot of tree questions on Horticulture Day over the last 3 weeks. I can imagine that you've also been getting a lot of questions and a lot of web traffic from people. But you have a guide for homeowners on how to deal with their wind-damaged trees. So you have that information available. Have people also been calling and asking you what they should do?
Yes, it's been overwhelming. We've been getting lots and lots of calls of all types. I mean, people care so much. You know, I want to encourage people not to plant just an ornamental tree. I know it's hard to deal with all the large trees we've had to take down. We want to plant quality shade trees if we can, you know. But I want to emphasize safety. I mean, just driving around right now or walking. I was looking at a mail carrier this morning and, you know, walking through Marion just thinking, oh, I hope she's looking up. There's so many hangers, widowmakers hanging in trees. We've got to really be careful about looking up and not trying to wrangle those. We need her professional tree services, as busy as they are, to handle those large limbs up high in trees. I was just looking at a map of Marion this morning. There are thousands of trees yet to come down on the streets because they're so damaged. You know, they've lost heartwood. If a tree loses over 50% of its canopy, generally it won't make it.
So we'll continue, you know, to see losses from this storm in the months and even possibly years to come.
Yes, we're going to see a lot of trees coming down that are still standing on the streets. It's just hard to take, but you can see some of them are already dying, and then you'll see some of the limbs already dying. This is dangerous, very, very dangerous. I'm really concerned about some of our inner city underserved neighborhoods, you know, how we're going to get resources to them to help them get some of these trees down. Last week I was in a neighborhood in Cedar Rapids over by Daniels Park, and there were still trees. I mean, I'm talking like Friday, there were still trees on people's homes.
Wow.
Large trees.
You are training tree keepers to help plant trees and care for trees as they grow. There is a prevention that we can take as far as you've talked about planting native trees and planting trees that will be strong, but we also need to manage these trees as they grow so that structurally they can withstand storms, right?
Exactly. Yeah, young trees need to be pruned to have a nice, solid single leader. They need to be mulched and planted properly. So there's a lot to learn about pruning young trees. And, you can basically the tree keepers are highly trained in that. And we really need an army of folks to help our municipalities with that. That's been, you know, just watering. We have a lot of our teens out watering, watering, pruning, all those things. We need even more volunteers to be out helping with. Very hard for our municipalities to have enough staff to do all that.
I'm sure that a lot of people, if they can get their hands on a tree, are eager to plant this fall. Do you have any words of wisdom for people who want to just get out there and dig a hole and plant immediately?
Yeah, I do. We hope that you'll select some really high quality natives that will support birds and pollinators. We have a great list on our website, and it's under pollinators. If you can't find it, call the office. We'll help you, but it really has a long list of trees that, you know, the Forest Service funded some research by Dr. Doug Tallamy to identify the top 100 trees in every state that support pollinators. When we say support pollinators, those are the trees that are also going to support everything else, whether it's squirrels or turkey or, you know, birds, lots of birds. That's what they need. So that's really encourage people to do that.
All right, and don't plant exactly the same tree as your neighbor either, because we're talking about an urban forest. So it's not just diversity in your yard, right? It's diversity in your neighborhood,
right,
too.
That's right. Let's diversify our blocks, our parks, so that we don't have a situation like we have with Emerald Ash Borer or Dutch Elm again.
I want to ask you, we just have a couple of minutes left, and I know that you founded Trees Forever now decades ago. And can you tell me, you know, people are sad right now. People are frustrated right now about the loss of trees, but a lot of us, maybe on a day-to-day basis, don't think very much about the trees around us. Why is Trees Forever necessary, and why are trees such an important part of our communities?
Well, we are very connected to trees. I mean, they provide so many benefits. Shade, of course, wildlife habitat. But we are very spiritually connected to trees. We have a lot of research to back up the fact that when you go out and walk in a forest or on a tree-lined street, your blood pressure goes down. Your happiness ratio goes up. It's very important to us that we have that wonderful cleansing, forest bathing benefit that we get from trees and forest.
So just to...
It's also important for kids, you know, to be out in a playground that has trees.
Just to review for people who want to do something, you are raising money right now to help replace some of the many, many trees that were taken out with your campaign at the moment of planting hope. What else can people do to get involved?
Well, they can become volunteers. They can help locally. They can encourage high quality, you know, if they have a friend that's going to plant something, encourage them to plant the right species that's going to support wildlife, and stay on top of their invasive species in woodlands. That's another thing we do a lot of education on. We're concerned about our rural woodlands, you know, lost a ton of trees. Oh, it's heartbreaking to see the woodlands that have been just decimated. So we're going to have to get in there and be sure the invasive species don't take over. You know, there's just so much to do. Yeah. With volunteers and landowners. And we're going to have to replace windbreaks. A lot of farms lost historic windbreaks during this.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for talking with me today, and best of luck. Thank you for helping all of us recover from this terrible storm.
Thank you, Charity. We're going to do what we can. I'm a proud sustaining member of IPR.
Oh, thank you so much. Shannon Ramsey is the founder of Trees Forever, and you can find out more about their campaign, Planting Hope, on their website, treesforever.org. As you heard in the interview, there are also opportunities to do an online training to become a tree keeper, and you can find out more about the trees in your yard that may have been damaged and how you can care for those, the kinds of trees you can plant, all kinds of resources, again, at treesforever.org. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.